we have to create the right vibe, you know, the energy, and everybody at the organization has to feel so privileged to be here. It's no other way.
Thanks for listening to the Purely Arsenal podcast. Please follow us on Twitter at Purely Arsenal FP for all the latest Arsenal podcasts.
Welcome to another episode of a sit down at the Purely Arsenal podcast. And as always, I am joined by my regular Neil Shah to discuss a 3-2 emphatic, thrilling win against Bournemouth. Oof, my heart can't take it. Neil, how are you?
Yeah, still recovering from it.
Crazy.
I don't think I've been for maybe a few, but that was something else, wasn't it? Not for a long time been for anything like that, especially even with Villa just recently. So it's quite crazy. That was,
yeah,
that was many, crazy.
Many regulars like yourself are saying they think it's up there with the best moments at the Emirates Stadium, mm-hmm. in terms of atmosphere and noise and sudden happenings, if you like. Obviously, they linked it to the Barcelona one and Arshavin, and the United one recently, of course. And there's a few others in there. Henri, of course, late goal against United. I remember being there for that one.
Yeah.
And we can talk about them all day, but this is definitely up there. When you say that, like it's Arsenal versus Bournemouth, you think, well, that's crazy. But before we do know, it was a really weird game for us because we're talking a lot on the chat. Me, you, James, and Mike. On the Purely Arsenal chat, and Anthony, of course, always chatting. And we just want to say James went through some real serious stuff and during the game, and unfortunately he lost his mum during the game, which is just crazy to lose your mum at any time, but let alone during the game. So we just want to let James know, LL Cool James 91, you know him, James Johnson. He's been on the podcast for a while. I know he's on other podcasts too, and I'm not able to shout all of those out, but you guys, I know you appreciate what he does too. Great guest on our podcast, great bloke. Just a really kind-hearted human being. That's why we have him on the podcast, that as well as his amazing Arsenal opinions. But thoughts with him and his family at this time, which is just a really, really difficult time for him. And just want to let him know that we're thinking of him as a small Arsenal community that we are here. And obviously we're texting him offline and talking to him offline, but trying to give him some time to be with his family. Neil, over to you if you want to add anything on it.
Yeah, just devastating news. As you said there, James is one of the nice guys out there. Finding it difficult to actually talk. My heart goes out to him, his family, his friends, his brother Dan, all his loved ones, and everyone that knew him, his mum. He spoke to me quite often about his mum, and I know that, you know, they were very close. She sounded like quite a really great, great lady. And I just want to, if you don't mind, Jack, and I've just had a quick chat with James a bit earlier or last night, and if he's okay, he's okay with it, and we can just dedicate the pod to him. We know how much Arsenal means to him. He also to his mum. And he also mentioned that, you know, after that goal went in, he just said, you know, my mum done it for me. My mum done it for me, because just. So if you're okay with it, just to dedicate the pod to him and his mother, and God rest his soul. And all our thoughts with him. And he will be back, but he'll be back in his own good time. And I think that's not just for our podcast. I think for all the channels that he's on. But everyone who knows him knows what a wonderful human being he is, as you said. And we're there for him. If he needs anything, we're there as well. So, this is for you, James, and your mum.
Yes. Top man, Neil. That was lovely. Absolutely. Thoughts with him. And it's definitely in memory of his mum. So, let's get, without further ado, I guess let's get into it, because it was a crazy game. I mean, just, I think we all went in after the Everton game, which was a very, you know, it was a game that you're like, oh, that's a lovely game to watch. You were at the game and you're like, well, Jack, I felt great in the second half, you know? And I think a lot of us went into this game, not playing it down or not believing it wouldn't be tough, but Bournemouth are definitely one of the worst teams in the league on paper. And you expect to win your home games anyway. We have a pretty formidable record there. And it just didn't go according to plan at all. And as soon from the first 9 seconds onwards, it was the second fastest goal in the Premier League ever after Shane Long's for Southampton against Watford in 2019. And at that moment, I just remember sitting back and going, oh gosh, this is going to be one of those days. This is going to be one. They're going to put us through the ringer again. And they did. I didn't believe it was going to be quite like it, but we've got to start at the end. We have to start at the end. We can't talk about the lineups and the games. It's just too monumental of a moment. But before we do, and there's a real link here, Neil, the first game that Mikel Arteta, people loving the quiz questions, by the way, other than you. But the first ever game Mikel Arteta managed was in 2019 Boxing Day against Bournemouth. Now, do you remember the score on that day?
Yes.
What was the score?
I think it was 1-1.
Yep. And do you remember the score?
Yes.
Who was it?
It was off the famous guy that had a few ups and downs with our club, Aubameyang.
Yep. Okay. Okay, here's my two real questions.
Oh, you get
No, we can't leave it that easy for you.
Well, I think I've got 50% at least. Go on then.
Okay. Those were the intro question, but these are two real questions. Who played in goal for Bournemouth on that day? Neil, I can tell you now, you have to know who played in goal for Bournemouth that day.
Really?
Think about the moment we're in and where we're at. And it's Mikel Arteta's Arsenal.
So there's obviously a link, right?
Huge link. Huge link.
Why can't I see it? Why can't I feel it? Hang on. Oh, Jack, why are you doing this to me, man?
Honestly, the question just comes to me on every game at the moment. It's unbelievable. And there's such a strong link with every game. There's something coming.
Is it ironic?
Well, a little bit. It's a bit crazy when you think about it, but you have to know the player's history, though. If you don't know the player's history, you won't get it. But it's other than that, it's very obvious.
It wasn't Ramsdale, was it?
It was Ramsdale. It was before we played for Sheffield United.
It's mental.
Yeah, first game. And the other question is who played right wing for Arsenal in Mikel Arteta's first game?
Oh, yeah, that's going to be linked, isn't it?
I'll give you a clue. It's not Saka. He did play, though. He played left back.
Oh. Ruben Emery's boy? I don't know that one. I can't remember.
Reece Nelson.
Oh, I should have thought that.
And do you know what? I thought there's so much reminiscing. I think these are just unbelievable moments, but it's so much reminiscing because we've spoke about Nelson on here a lot on this podcast for a player that really hasn't played for us much in the last few years.
Yeah.
But in his first few games, and I haven't got him up for me, I've got that game, but I remember playing Chelsea early on at home under Mikel Arteta and United. Reece Nelson started for Mikel Arteta in a lot of those games. And Mikel Arteta always, there's some quotes of him when he worked for the academy as a player, when he was doing his coaching badges, saying how much he loved Reece Nelson and all this sort of stuff. And it was really interesting, I thought, to hear his comments on Reece Nelson after this game and said how he made the decision to leave him out of the squad the last two games. He didn't think he had room for him. And he basically only had room for him today because Eddie Nketiah had a knock and he filled that gap. And he looked at it and he knew he needed something different. And this is a reminder to him and the coaching staff, which is really amazing way to look at it, of what Reece Nelson can offer. But Neil, we're going to talk about so many players, but your initial reaction at a point of 97 minutes and the ball dropping to Reece Nelson on a half volley on his left foot, what did you do? I mean, you said to me your stream cut out. So how did you find out about it? You found out from the text thread then? Wow.
Oh, God.
Amazing. I mean, amazing.
Look, can I just say, I think I wasn't... Oh, obviously, it's a huge moment, as you said, monumental. I can only imagine, from the experiences I've had at the stadium this season, how unreal that stadium noise would have been. Literally rocking. I think one of the comments... It was I looked at the I'll put loads of streams on afterwards about that goal. There's, you know, different channels covering it. And I'm sure one of the pundits on one of them, I can't remember which, said they just cannot understand how this stadium is literally moving. It's rocking. It's unbelievable. Never seen an or heard an atmosphere like it. We've experienced it at the Henry goal and in that against Man U. I was there, luckily, with your brother and your dad for the Barcelona game. And if it was anything on those levels, I can understand what they meant. But wow, what happened was I wasn't. It wasn't with a view of not wanting to watch it all because I thought it was over. Because my stream went well into the 96th minute. In 96 minutes, we only had 6 minutes of injury time. Now I know then something happened during that, so they. The ref added more on, thank goodness. And that's a little shout out to all those teams that want to waste time with us. Well, there you go. There's your penance for it.
Yeah, you know, exactly.
So be aware that, yeah, you can waste time, but it could cost you.
Same happened to Villa. Yep.
Exactly. And that's even if you're winning, and in both games, both teams were winning. So there you go with that one. And then all of a sudden my stream went dead and I'm like, oh, well, all right. I mean, I wasn't, it's a bit upset, but I wasn't hugely bothered. And then all of a sudden, I was still trying to fiddle around with it, but wasn't too bothered if I didn't get it back. And I thought I was going to get on with the rest of my day. And all of a sudden, the WhatsApp thing goes on my phone and I have a quick look and think. And someone's just, I think it was Anthony, he was going, I can't repeat it on here, but he sent a big messages in capital letters, if you remember, Jack. So I just put what? Because I thought, is he behind and he's seen the equaliser or something? I didn't know what he meant. So for me, I thought the game was over. And then someone else in another WhatsApp group is like, get in there again with a few profanities. And I'm like, what? Tell me what's going on. And then all of a sudden my stream came back. And I'm seeing the replay of the reaction of the players and the crowd going mental. The commentator on the stream is going mental. And I went, oh my God. We've won. We've actually won. And the irony is they scored the fastest or second fastest in the Prem, the fastest this season. And we scored with only literally the same amount of time left. I think it was very close to 98 minutes, Jack.
Yeah.
But I want to say one thing. All of that insane emotions, like you, I had things to do and I was going somewhere and I thought I can't do it because I was more interested in all the tweets, you know, everyone's on WhatsApp going mental, you sending in loads of links to everything and I had to watch them all. And then I had to keep watching the replays of the goal and the crowd emotions. And
in every language of commentary.
The squad emotions, Arteta's face, him going mental, all the back room. I think even the tea lady must have come out and run out. I love the fact Jorginho was involved. And you know what? He's so into
coaching from the sidelines, isn't he?
He's so into the, exactly, Jack. He's so into this club. I never saw anything like that when he was at Chelsea. I think he genuinely loves being here. He's come in here and he's seen, because he was quite late as well, wasn't he, in the window?
So yeah.
It's not even as if he had time to soak it all in. He was like really late and he's come in and he's understood what's going on and he's taken to it like I'm at home. It almost feels like he's at home. It's weird. This is a Chelsea player. What's going on here, Jack? So can you imagine the kind of culture Arteta's got there? It must be incredible. It's not going to work for every player, of course, but he's like, as you said, he's like running up and down the lines, shouting instructions. Maybe he wants to become a coach as well. Maybe all these players want to become coaches after seeing what Arteta's doing and done so far. But absolutely insane. But I just want to say one thing. In a small way, I'm not surprised because the amount we peppered that goal. We had 81% possession, I think, in that game.
31 shots, I think it was as well. I think something like that.
17 corners.
Oh, so insane. And didn't do anything from any of them until the 97th.
No, insane, but it didn't. But because of that constant barrage, I thought it was deserved, although, albeit late. I said the same thing at the Villa thing. you know, there were two goals in injury time, but deserved because of Mount. We pummeled the goal.
Yeah.
Oh, mate, Jack, surely it's got to be up there, one of your most insanely emotional.
Oh, unbelievable. I just couldn't, I didn't know what to do. My wife was just taking my kids outside because they were, you know, they just needed to get out and walk around a little bit. And I was like, yeah. And I'll be right there, you know, it's almost done. But I was frustrated throughout the game and emotions were high because it's a game you do expect to win, without, you know, being overconfident. You're sitting there going, you've got to beat Bournemouth at home. If you're going to win a title, you've just got to beat them at home. And obviously it didn't, but when the ball went in, I genuinely thought, you know, there's no way he's going to be on six, even though I felt we should have had more. They had a guy down for about 45 seconds during the 6 minutes with nothing. He just went down just like lots of their players were doing. And I don't discredit them as such because they are fighting for their lives. And unlike a Newcastle and Man U that came and did it that we were really angry about, I kind of get why Bournemouth do it. They must be kind of flipping it. We're going to get something at the Emirates. You know, I'm going to try my hardest not to absolutely blow them, you know, off like I did those clubs because United and Newcastle got no excuse for it. But Bournemouth, I get it, you know. But honestly, when it felt to Nelson, I just couldn't. It was like I wasn't seeing it right. Like everything went in slow motion for a second because there were so many bodies in the way of it, and it was just so odd. And like you said, the celebrations. I mean, how many times have you watched celebrations? It's just amazing to see. Nelson's the calmest of the lot of them, which is incredible to me. I'm watching it. This is without doubt the biggest moment of your career. I mean, that's not being offensive to Nelson. I mean, you're a young player with huge potential that hasn't fulfilled it yet, and you've just possibly, depending on what happens, but either way, I mean, you put yourselves into a memory that will last a lifetime. But, you know, if something big happens this season, you've literally written yourself into history. If you do nothing again, you've literally written yourself into history. And he's so calm. And what's amazing to me is to see all the player reactions, and they so fit into the player personality. Ødegaard drops down to the floor, you know, like relief, utter exhaustion because of how much he gives to it. The lunatic that is Zinchenko is doing a high jump in the middle of the pitch. Saliba, the oddity of Saliba, who never knows what to do when he celebrates a goal. And it's the only moment he looks anything but the calm, you know, Adonis that we see of him, this man mountain. And him and Partey are kind of dancing, but not really understanding where to go. So he just goes and kicks the corner flag. And there's all these other bits. And like you said, Arteta, there's a kid that runs onto the pitch that runs into Arteta, who hugs Arteta, and Arteta holds him because he's like, well, hold on, where's your parents at? And how are you on the pitch kind of thing? There's just all this pandemonium going on. And you can feel it through the cameraman, And it's just insane. It's just unreal. And the only thing you want to do is just relive it over and over again. And you can't get on with your day because how can you get on with your day after that? It's just unbelievable because coming back from 2-0 is one thing, but doing it in that manner and that late and the way we did it, we lost Trossard. Eddie was out. Jesus isn't back yet. We had to shift Martinelli in, which you would have been happy with, but we then had to bring Smith Rowe on and bring him off again because he's clearly not fit enough to play more than 45, 50 minutes. I'm sure there was no plan to play him more than 45 minutes yet. And that's about what he played, I think. And he did a commendable job, I thought, considering he's been out for 6 months. I mean, there's some people saying things like, oh, he looks way off the pace. I'm like, he's been out for 6 months post-surgery. I thought he did a pretty decent job with the ball. He created the first goal from a header. Give him, he needs time. He wasn't supposed to be thrust in. Neither was Reece Nelson, but Reece Nelson, other than his hamstring injury, has shown this season, certainly from the bench, that he can really, really make an impact. You know, Nottingham Forest got a brace at Hoffenheim. When he went to Hoffenheim, he had this ability to come off the bench and just score absolute worldies like 6 or 7 times that season. And, you know, and that was under a top coach in Nagelsmann. And he looked so comfortable. And it wasn't just the goal, Neil. He has got an argument to be possibly man of the match in that 20 minutes. I mean, he created the Ben White goal. He was so willing to go beyond his man and take risks and really push for more in the game, which is really interesting to see him from the left, because I don't think I've seen it in a Premier League game for a while. When he came on against Nottingham Forest, it was sort of right because Saka went off with an injury. So it just absolutely mental. Like the whole part of that, the finish to the game was absolutely incredible. And it leaves us back where we were and 5 points clear and we go again. But I mean, if we're going to talk a little bit on the first half and bring ourselves down a peg or two, it's a terrible way to start. And Neil, I think from the first minute when we conceded the goal, we left ourselves just really defensively vulnerable throughout the game. And although they didn't create much, they created some really good chances. And Ramsdale made some really massive saves. I remember the one in the first half when it looked, I think it was 3-on-1 or something.
Yeah, you get so.
And it looked, I was like, that's a goal. And the closing down from Ramsdale there. But I actually think the better save was at 2-1, where I think it was Billing who scored the first goal, takes it down on his chest. Party loses his man again. Party had the weirdest game. But defensively, shocking. But everything else, unbelievable. Like, just the way he brought us back. Like, oh, just really crazy game. But the save from Ramsdale's foot on that Billing one is reactionary. But wow, that is a huge save. But Neil, I mean, just talk to me about their two goals a little bit. I mean, we were defensively quite vulnerable. Do you think something to do with that is losing a goal so early and just realizing you've got to go for it? Or do you have sort of more long-term concerns that we're leaking a few too many chances, we're looking very vulnerable on the break, even with Partey in the team?
I would say on the latter part, not concerned yet, because obviously we had a clean sheet against Everton, we had a clean sheet against Leicester. So again, I think this was a complete one-off. Apparently the Bournemouth manager said they had practiced this and it worked. It just happened to work.
The corner?
Yeah, no, the first goal.
The first goal. Yeah, sorry, the first goal.
So I just wanted to talk about that very briefly. I don't think you can legislate for that much, apart from the old adage, you have to be alert from second one to the final second. In this case, almost the 98th minute. You cannot relax all the time. That whistle is in play for the whole game. You have to be on it. And I don't think anyone expected it. I'm sure none of us expected it. It's Bournemouth as well. Maybe that's the kind of thing, how they played it. They thought they could expect this from us. And they just went. I mean, it was ridiculous. I don't know. Again, with me, because I was watching it on stream, I was trying to get the stream ready. And I'd already got text messages. Yeah, great, 1-0 down. I'm like, what? What are you talking about? I didn't even know the game was kicked off.
Yeah. That was from me, yeah.
I think it was at 3 o'clock on my watch. And I thought, normally the games don't kick off till a bit after anyway. And I'm like, what are you lot talking about? And then
I've got the thread here. I'll see what you said. But I'm just seeing your comment when we scored and your answer to Anthony is, Edgar, where, what? Yeah. Sorry, carry on. It's a goal, is it? Brilliant.
Yeah, I don't know what Edgar is. It's supposed to be my swipe tips.
You were probably just uncontrollable like I was at that point and you didn't know what to type. Yeah, and your answer to my 1-0 down at 3:01 p.m. was, yeah. What?
There you go. I mean, what? So I don't think anyone would have been... So I'm not going to blame our players only for the fact that you've got to be alert from... Just be alert. And they'll learn from that, surely. I think every team's going to look at that and learn from that. Goodness me. But fair play to them. They tried something. It worked. Bournemouth, though. I could expect it from Man City or even Liverpool after, we just quickly mentioned, a 7-0 banging.
It was hilarious, to be honest.
Sorry, Gary and Ever, what you've been saying about the quad? Anyway, exactly. And they're going to finish above us, apparently, aren't they? Yeah, whatever.
Keep saying it, Gary. Keep saying it.
Yeah, keep saying it. Yeah, we will welcome it. Welcome those comments. And so I think that obviously put us on the back foot. As you said, we then struggled. I think if there's any criticism of us recently, Jack, we seem to be playing two very different halves of football. We tend to be, I think it's quite rare that we've had a good first and a poorer second. But the trend, if I'm correct, Arteta, whatever he says in this dressing room, it seems to wake us up a bit. It seems to get us playing a bit better. As you, and it's epitomised by Partey's performance. I mean, Jesus. Second half, what a performance. I mean, even for, which goal was it? The Ben White goal, wasn't it? It was all him initially.
Yes. He won that ball and gave it out.
Did
to
you
Nelson.
See what he did in Brilliant. Front of their defenders?
Brilliant.
Wow, the way he carried it across the pitch and into the midst, and then he could lay off. Oh, wow, what a, that was great. So kudos to him for that, but he just wasn't at the races at the first half, which was strange because when he came on, the way he controlled the last game, and I remember I was saying I felt so comfortable seeing him, and he just looked the part, and he was just commanding, and as you talked about, his athleticism. So it was a bit sad to see that from him, but hey-ho, I think we'll learn from that as well. And then the second goal, I think, yeah, you're right. I think they, although we had so much possession, so much control, they had the better chances, Jack.
They only had four shots, but they were all big chances.
Yeah, they
and
had the better
four
chances.
Shots on target. We had 31 shots and 81% possession here, Kerry.
And what do you say? What were we saying about goalkeepers? Were just as important, just as valuable as 3 points, Ramsdale. You know, not many people are going to probably talk about Ramsdale on this game, but he was crucial to it. Crucial, crucial, crucial. But you know, they got a set piece. They got a corner as well. And we're like, oh dear, and. You know, the fact that we were still 2-0 down with 63 minutes on the clock says so much about our character and our testament. Again, I'm not even going to say it, talk about it anymore, because it's boring. We've been saying it all season. The character and mentality and attitude of these players, they just do not know how to lose. That really, again, takes me back to the Invincible era and even the golden era of Wenger. And I'm going to go out on a limb here, and I'm going to say this, Jack, and you may disagree with me. I actually think, and although we didn't lose a game in the Invincible season, of course, I don't think I've seen a character or an attitude of a team like this ever in all my years of following Arsenal, ever, because they're so young as well.
That's a huge factor, yeah.
Maybe because they don't have any fear. I don't know what it is, but they have... Oh my goodness me, what character this team has got. But Partey was night and day for sure. I mean, you may have things to say about the defensive errors or whatever it might be, but I mean, the corner was just so quick. It was positioning maybe wasn't great, but it was just bang, bullet, straight in the net. And you're like, can you really legislate? Can you really mitigate that? Can you legislate and kind of criticise our players against that when they're trying to go for, obviously, not just the draw, we wanted a win. Because it's Bournemouth. We have to win these games to win the title. We have to win these games. Again, no disrespect to teams like this, but my focus is just on the second half, mate.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, at 2-0 down and Partey loses his man, you're going, oh, you know, where do we go from here? I think it was around the 60th minute, wasn't it, the second goal? And, you know, they're going crazy, rightly so. And you're looking at us and thinking, where do we go from here? There's not a lot we can do from the bench. There's not a lot we can do. He's already changed Tomiyasu for White, which I thought was a very good change. I like Tomiyasu a lot, but we lacked something. We lacked something down the right, and White gave it to us. You know, he brought the energy, and he fantastic to see his first goal, but just certain players really dragged us through in that game. And I think one of them is Thomas, but Tom, I mean, he, there's an argument that he was little error prone for both goals, certainly the second goal. And he has a huge involvement, you know, in two of our three goals, really. And it was just a weird game because defensively he's so capable and reliable. And it was just weird. You don't usually see him lose his man in a box. You don't see us concede much at all from corners. Certainly not like that, where you're just losing a man like that. It was just a free header. But just players like Partey just draw us forward. But the response was quick, which was really important. We were 2-0 down, and if it dragged a little bit more, you think the weight could... The first thing I heard when we were 2-0 down was our crowd singing Arsenal over and over again. If you watch the 2-0 goal, all you can hear about 10 seconds after the goal is Arsenal, Arsenal, And I was like, I don't know, me being a fan at 2-0 down, if I'm singing that at that point, just because I'm so upset. And so I'm like, wow, I don't remember being in a stadium where we've been like that. I just don't remember that. We're not with not with 30 minutes left. Doesn't matter what point in the season you're at or wherever. It's just, so like you said, the character of the group is amazing. The youngest team in the league. And obviously the next 12 games are really going to tell us a lot about that. And I do have a couple of, not negatives, but sort of concerns about the way we're winning games at times and the fact that it just can be so emotionally draining. And the media's talked a lot about that too. But I think, you know, we've had a few games now where we've just been, you've been rung through the ringer, and I'm sure the players have too. And we have to try to keep it really level and steady and not, you know, exert too much energy into each game, because there's so many big games to come thick and fast. But it was a great response at, you know, it was not more than 5 minutes we were down 2-0. And, I want to say it was from a corner actually. So I think it was from a corner, and when Smith, it was cleared from the goalkeeper, and then Smith Rowe headed it back in, and it was a nice volley from Partey. When the second one went in, Neil, like you just said, Partey, correct, and Nelson put a lovely ball across. From my view, I didn't think that was it. I thought it was saved. I know it was close, but it was actually way in. But I did not think that was in, so I didn't move. I didn't move for Partey's goal. I just went like that, you know. And when that goal happened, I stood up and I was like, and when they all start, because it's so quick, that's the one thing that is quick, the goal line technology. They've got that figured out. And White didn't know what to do. I mean, Zinchenko's all over it, but White's like, I've scored, you know. It's always amazing to see White, who's pretty stellar faced, just kind of, you know, start to express this sort of true joy kind of thing. And at that point, Neil, I think it's not even the 70th minute, and you're 2-2, and you're going, yeah, we're doing. Even I was going, we're winning this now. Do you know what I mean? And you know, and it drags, and we missed a lot of chances. I mean, if you look, three players had more than 100 touches past Saka. Saka had 100. Odegaard 106. Odegaard had 11 shots on goal. Again, one player that we got to also discuss is Zinchenko. Three shots on goal, four key passes, the most in the game, the most touches in the game, and the highest pass percentage in the game other than Trossard and Vieira, who had far, far less touches to the ball, so it can't really be considered at that same level. He just in every sense of the word, Zinchenko's a leader when the chips are down. When the chips are down, look to Zinchenko, because he's going to drag you forwards, right? He's done it with City. He's done it with us multiple times. Look to him, and it was him that created the corner for the final. Put a final goal. Neil, just any thoughts on the two goals that got us back in? I think it was interesting. Two goal scores that you don't expect. Our wingers weren't as prolific as they could have been in this game. It's nice to see that, isn't it? You've got to get goals from all over the place when you're gonna go for a title.
Jack, all these years we've been doing the pods, you're very structured in the way you ask questions, and I'm always trying to follow it. I can't be today, mate. There's just so much to talk about. So I'm gonna just have a free reign for just a few seconds, if you don't mind. Not that I don't anyway, and I do mumble on a bit, but Jack, Jesus Christ. I mean, you've got all three goals hail in connections, all three of them. Let's just talk about the substitutions. There's been question marks over Arteta's substitutions, but recently he's been getting them bang on. You're completely right about Tomiyasu. I just think Tomiyasu hasn't had enough time. I don't think he's a bad player. I think he's a great player. He just hasn't had enough minutes on the pitch. He hasn't had consistency yet. And you can't, you've got to do what's right for the team. As much as I love the player, you've got to do what's best for the team. And unfortunately, Ben White's in his way at the moment. And it's just one of those things. So that was a great substitution. The substitution of Emile Smith Rowe coming was unfortunate, and I don't know how long, because Trossard's been brilliant. And that's my only worry. That was the only negative of the game for me in that respect. I feel that, I don't know how long he's going to be out. I mean, Eden.
Yeah, especially when you don't heal quickly, do they?
Ah, man. So it could be a few weeks, which is not good.
I think so, yeah.
So, all right. So that's the only kind of big negative I would say. Luckily, Jesus is just around the corner, hopefully. So that fixes that. But, yeah, we still want Trossi back ASAP. Then you've got another substitution with the substitute being taken off for the reasons you said. Don't think there's anything tactical. Don't think it's because he was, I thought he had an assist, another Haaland connection. And then he comes off another Haaland. Yeah, Haaland boy comes on. And then the second goal is, it's a Haaland connection with a White. Yeah. And then a Haaland connection converts, actually scores a goal. So it's like all three. I think Ian Wright mentioned that as well. He goes, all three were Haaland connections. He got that. I thought you got the genius with the substitutions. What I also liked is you've had two recent debut goals from defenders, both restoring a 2-2 lead, a 2-2 equalising goal.
Both first goals as well, yeah.
Yeah, with Zinchenko and Ben White. And it's the first time I've seen Ben White really smile on the pitch.
Yeah, that was me as well.
It was
like genuinely smile, not like just like having a laugh.
Did you see his interview afterwards? Oh my God.
I didn't see him speak. No.
Oh my God. He's just like, so what did I tell you to do? Yeah. Well, not much.
I know.
He's so sweet. Oh, just maybe a couple of overlap. Do you know who he reminds me of? And I was going to tweet and then something stopped me. Remember the Office? Oh, you know The Office. You love The Office. Remember the accountant, the big guy with the beard and Keith. The way he talks? That's
Keith.
Ben White
accountant?
Interviews. Keith, I
yes,
think so.
Keith. Yeah, yeah.
That's Ben White in interviews. Yeah. It really is. It's just the way he answers. Yeah. No. I'm like...
Yeah. Yeah, he don't want to elaborate on anything, does he? It's
him.
Odd because he does a lot of interviews, but he clearly doesn't like doing them, but he's always called in to do the interviews.
So weird. But yeah, like you, I didn't think that was in. And I think that is one, you're right, VAR, obviously, we can talk about all till the cows come home, but goal line technology is one of the best things ever in terms of technology.
You can't
which
argue with any of it, can you?
Fabulous. And it was way over when you saw it. But oh my God, I mean, again, that was Reece Nelson as well. And he just made an impact. I think that was one of his first touches as well, his assist. Literally one of his first touches.
Been, yeah.
He'd only been on a couple of seconds.
He only came on for 20 minutes. Yeah. And that goal was in the 69th, 70th, yeah. I want to say. So, no, yeah, you're spot on with that.
And you know what? You mentioned Odegaard. Did you see that bit of skill? Near the death. This was a little bit before Zinchenko got the corner for the final goal, but there was a bit of play he did in the penalty box. Just on the
line. I remember it.
Oh
remember
my
it. Yep,
God!
Yep,
the
yep.
feet on that bloke is unbelievable. He's surrounded by players and no space, and he still weaves his way through it with skill.
Yeah,
and you can't underestimate the talent of that bloke.
No.
He's incredible. He's so quick. And balanced. It's just like guys getting better and better. And you're right, Zinchenko's influence is massive, but Odegaard as well. I mean, we've got some players, haven't we? We've got something very special.
The high technical players really stand out in the pressure moments Zinchenko's and Odegaard's, I think.
Oh, absolutely so. So sorry, I've completely gone way. I don't remember what your question was now.
I don't think I had much. I was just asking you to sort of elaborate on the two goals that got us back into the game.
Yeah. So Ben White, so pleased for him getting his first. Oh, that's the other thing I wanted to talk about. You're mentioning about the concern about the way we're winning games. I don't think it's a bad thing. I think actually this is going to benefit us because of the age of our group. I think this buoys them. It's like, wow, we can. Football really is about, you know, that cliche that a goal only takes a second to score. We've proven it, as you said before we started recording, four times already this season. Never say die attitude. Never give up, because look what can happen as a result. And I don't think it will. I think from an emotional draining point of view, possibly, but it's not as if we're playing extra time in a cup game every match. So we're playing an extra 30 minutes. We're playing a few extra minutes. And actually, as a result of them, look at the elation and the release of emotion. And then on top of that, the belief that we could be going and out of a game or coming out of a game with only 1 point. And actually, we've gained an extra 4 in just 2 of those games recently because of the constant barrage, the never say give up attitude. And I think, if anything, that's going to be a benefit. It's going to be a pro, not a con. That's just my opinion, but I think it will be. I get what you're saying, that why we're leaving it so late, we shouldn't be leaving it so late. End of the day, until the final whistle goes, Jack, the game's not over. Doesn't matter how deep you are into it.
I agree. I get you. I was just playing devil's advocate on it. And obviously,
yeah, sure.
Time will tell in the next 12 games. You know, that's what a lot of people that have, you know, City fans and you know, the likes of, you know, some commentators are sort of saying, well, you know, they're not even in the last 10 game stretch yet. And they're, you know, going to the wire on every game, and you know they're expending a lot of energy on it and emotions and da da da. But it's not like we chose to either. You know, I mean, you don't want to, you know, win games like this. And I think in an argument, I mean, we've beaten Fulham in sort of towards the last minute. I think it was 89th, 90th minute there with Gabriel. United obviously late on, but United, we should have won that way earlier. I mean, that was what you saw from Liverpool today. We dominated United more than they did. And they won 7-0. And, you know, it's all about finishing your chances, da da da. But we dominated them more than they did. That's a fact, right? If you look at the XG and everything, it bears out. Villa away again. I mean, we pummeled their goal for the last 45 minutes. Really should have won that game earlier. And then this one, you know, you make some key mistakes at the back. You have 31 shots. And you probably
can I just say,
as well.
Sorry. Sorry to interrupt you. But I want to say one thing. You mentioned that the pundits are saying this thing. Well, it's all the pundits. Can I just have a message for you? If the officiating was done correctly, number one, and there's a big one on that on this game, huge.
Massive, yeah.
And if the other team didn't time waste so much, maybe we would be finishing it before 90 minutes. So yeah. There you go.
And I think that's what I was dreading as well about this game. At 2-2, I was sitting there for about 15 minutes thinking we were going to do it. And then about the 85th, I was like, this game's going to be just all about the handballs, and I'm going to be reading it, and I can't read that. You know, I just don't want to read it. I don't want to read it because nothing you can do about it. And there was a ridiculous amount of appeals for handballs. And whilst I don't think every one of them was a handball, two of them were about as clear a handball. And I'm talking about the one where the guy goes up for the header, closes his eyes, and just hits his arm into it. I mean, I don't really know how that can't be given as a handball, to be honest. Yeah. So that was ludicrous. The other one was when Saka crossed it and the guy whacks his arm out and hits it against the post.
But that was natural. That was natural.
What's natural about that? Do you know? The others, I can see very... The problem I think we're having here, Neil, is we've already had two apologies from the PGMOL. One of them has caused the sacking of one of their staff members, one of their officials. The other one was a huge game at Old Trafford, a pinnacle, big moment where we would have gone 1-0 up at Old Trafford, completely changed the complexity of the game. And they've already admitted it's wrongly ruled out. So we're sitting there not going, oh, you should just give us stuff. But we're very, at the very least, going, if there's a call to make, make the call. Do you know what I mean, mate? And this isn't, I don't think it's even...
But the guy who officiated us, wasn't he the one that the controversy in the Brighton game? Is it the same ref?
I think he was on VAR for this one, yeah.
Yeah.
Something like that, yeah. Again, yeah, you're right. How's he not being sat in a room at the moment by Howard Webb and being talked to? I don't understand. I mean, I think that's the frustration that Arsenal fans get. And obviously, you always look at it from your own perspective, but...
Ben White being punched by the goalkeeper, Jack.
Yeah, he got his comeuppance, didn't he, that keeper?
He got it, but he punched him, and I'm sorry, that's a red card, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, at the very least, it's a pen. You know what I mean? I mean, but they'll say it's off the ball, but you can't just whack someone. I mean, that's ridiculous. And that was brilliant to see. I didn't really understand the Ben White celebration until I'd seen, because I hadn't seen the punch, I'm sure you hadn't either, until you looked at the replay. But he's well within his rights to do that after that. And, you know, in fairness, their keepers, like every keeper, but he was time-wasting a ridiculous amount. So, like you're saying, I mean, if one of those decisions gone our way, and at the very least one of those two should be going to us, you're talking about not a last-minute, last-gasp moment again. But like we've said on previous pods, even as previous as last week, if we're going to win anything this season, and anything big, we are going to have to overcome poor refereeing, because it is not going to change whether you think it's an unconscious bias or corruption or just something that we're having a bad luck season. Whatever you think it is not going to change. And the fortress that the Emirates is becoming, those decisions at Old Trafford or Anfield or even at City Stadium, they get one of those, I think. And I think that's the frustration. We're all sitting there going, yeah, you're not going to give it to us. And it's no coincidence that all those teams happen to come from about 30 miles where all the referees have been born. But, you know, there's a difference for it. Yeah. You know, it's you know, I don't want to go down the corruption route, but whatever you think it is, it's not changing in the next 12 games.
No, I agree with you.
and we are going to have to be we're going to have to be this good to overcome it.
Yeah,
and I thought what was amazing was Arteta's a pretty collected guy. I wouldn't say he's collected as Wenger. He's riled up on the sidelines, but he knows his boundaries. And I think I want to say that's the first time I've really seen him lose control of his bodily function. Like he literally didn't know where to run. I mean, I think he ran and hugged Tierney somewhere down there. I didn't even know it was Tierney because he had his snood up. And which was lovely to see, but he's hugging everyone he can find and running up and down the sidelines, just like the players were, and you know all the coaching staff, and it's just mayhem. But it was really funny to see the moment that Arteta saw the winner go in, and the cameraman, who is an official cameraman, I believe, can't control his camera, so he's obviously lost it as well. Which I just think it's just. It's been a funny weekend for a lot of reasons, footballing wise, of course, but Tottenham losing, the United loss after Neville thinks they're in the title race. There's just been a lot to look at this weekend and just go, wow, it's why it's the best sport in the world, isn't it? And it's why it's probably the best league in the world. But, we've got 12 big ones still to go, but just on that, a few other things, Neil. I do think we should quickly touch on Smith Rowe and a couple of other players. He's been 6 months out. I don't think he expected to even come on probably in this game. He did come on for about 10-15 minutes in the last one because we were 4-0 up. And he looked rusty, in fairness, against Everton. I don't think he looked as rusty in this game. I thought he looked good on the ball. I thought he looked quite sharp whilst he wasn't doing the driving runs into the box and the early shots that he does with little backlift and all that sort of stuff. I was watching him going, no, you're doing all right. I've got no problem with how you're looking 2 games back into your recovery. I thought he looked quite good. What was your thoughts on him?
Yeah, me agreed as well. I think the irony of this deal is if Trossard didn't get injured and Jesus is knocking around the corner, I think Smith Rowe would have been after both of those to come in on a game. So I think his input into this season probably would have been mainly Europa League, depending how far we got with it. Now he's going to be the next substitute on, because Jesus returns in 2-3 weeks. There's no Trossard. So I think he'll be the next one on. If he sticks with this kind of play and Eddie doesn't get an in, because I think, you know,
we don't know anything with Eddie, exactly. So we don't know what's going on.
He's obviously had a knock, but I think even if he hadn't had a knock and he wasn't injured, do we change it now with this system of Martinelli, Trossard, Martinelli, Jesus, Martinelli possibly, then Smith Rowe in there, or Jesus? I don't know. It's going to be harder, I think, now for Eddie to come back in when Jesus is back. But also the fact that Trossard's injured, I think we're going to have Smith Rowe's kind of already elevated one level up to get into. So I think it's a good thing, although it probably was very unexpected. I believe if the game had gone similar to Everton, we were 3-4-0 up, Smith Rowe would have come on just to get some minutes. But he's been forced to come on, played literally half a game, not expected. And although people might be saying X, Y, and Z, I completely disagree as well. He's had no time, absolutely no time at all. You're going to expect that from a player that's been off for a while. And also from an emotional point of view, there's a lot riding on him, because a lot is expected of this boy. We know that he carried the team with Saka a couple of seasons ago. And he was doing brilliant things before he got injured, absolutely brilliant things. And he probably knows himself that he's one of the ones that is for the future of this club. So there's also that emotional expectation on him too. So for him to just come in and be amazing from the get-go, it's not going to happen. But the fact that he's got a good 45 minutes in, I think he'll definitely play in the next Europa game. 100% he'll play.
He will start, because I put my team out, and I'll explain it to you in a second, but I said he
not will.
Then I thought about it again. I went, maybe he will. But I think there's a chance now with Nelson's emergence again that he might not start. Do you know what I mean?
Correct.
An interesting one. Because
So I'm fully behind him, and I think he'll be fine. I think he's coming right at the right time, especially if Trossard's injured. I'm not saying he's a direct replacement for Trossard, but he's an option, which otherwise we wouldn't have had. And I think that way we could mix it up a bit. And again, it depends on how far we go in the Europa League. If we go far, we're going to need all of this. We're going to need all of them. to be able to carry us through in both competitions. So, yeah, I think it was a good omen, to actually, in a weird way. Probably not one that was planned for, but football's you have to expect the unexpected in football. These things happen. So, you've done all right for me.
I think you'll be delighted that you got those minutes as well, because he might have been sitting there after the 10 minutes against Fulham thinking, well, when do I get in?
Correct.
You know, to this team, especially in the Premier League, he probably looked at the Europa League game as an option where he would have come on, and I'm sure he would have done. But to get those 45 minutes in, I think, early is a huge bonus. And it was interesting that he didn't choose Reece Nelson as that option, knowing that Reece Nelson was probably fitter and further along. But he explained it after the game that, you know, he's come back from a hamstring injury. There's people ahead of him. He didn't even put him in the squad the last few games, you know. What does it say, though? Smith, I think you're right. I think there's a chance he plays a midweek Smith Rowe, or at the very least plays a good part. And I've come around to the thinking, I'll get onto you in a second on it, I actually think we should heavily rotate midweek, and I'll explain why I think that. I think the injuries are part to play in that as well, but I don't think we will heavily rotate, but I actually would quite heavily rotate. But again, I don't know if that's the right decision or not. Like against Man City in the Cup, I didn't want to heavily rotate, and he did. And I think it set us back a little bit. That was the point where we had one winning in 1 point out of 9 after that City game. So it's hard to judge. Do you want to keep the momentum going, 4 wins in 4, or do you change it because you know you need to keep what you have fresh? It's a really difficult sort of conundrum. But on Nelson, his contract's up in July. There's not really been talk of any new contract. He's a Arsenal boy since he was 7-8 years old. He was the player in that young group of Saka, Smith Rowe, Nelson, that was talked about as being the player. He was the Patino of this era, if you like. He was the player that everyone said was going to, you know, reach for the stars. And it's not happened for him on loan or at Arsenal. It's not really happened for him. But you've got to give him credit, because he's had a long time out of the first team. And when he's come in against Forest, a long time away, and he made an immediate impact. And here he's bided his time again. He's been out of the squad for the last two games. He does deserve some credit there for just being ready and being ready to make his impact, whether it's 5 minutes, 20 minutes, 90 minutes, doesn't he?
100%. I mean, he's been through so much in that respect that you just described, so much. And that could absolutely destroy a player. You know, he's the complete opposite of someone like Niles. And I was just, I'm not being played, not good enough. Even Eddie, to a certain extent, has voiced it. But he, not so much from Nelson. And and when he's interviewed, you can see how much he loves the club. You can see how much he enjoys being his participation and his contribution. It means so much to him, you can tell. And that's coming from someone who really should be, the way we talk about Saka, we should be speaking about him. But it doesn't seem to have affected him in that way. And he's just, you know, he's taking it on the chin. So for me, he's almost like another one of our group of consummate professionals, you know, like the Holdings of this world. And maybe that's not such a good attitude to have, that, oh, I'm happy to get whatever I'm given. You know, if you want to go far, you want to be, maybe like have a bit of the Eddie attitude. Hang on a minute. I should be out there playing. I'm good enough. Why am I not playing? So there's kind of a little bit of a counter argument there. But I'm happy to see that Arteta's still kind of given him a chance despite all of this. I only see a good player in him, Jack. I want him to stay. I don't even want him to go out alone. I want him to stay, and I want him to fight for his place and have a chance. And to be honest, look, let's be honest. I know everyone laughs at me. We are winning this league, and we are going to be in the Champions League next season. So we're going to need players. It's very easy to say we're going to go big in the window and buy new players. And I know a lot of them work very quickly. They come in and bang, wow, they're off and running. But when you've got players who've already had experience in the Prem, who have experience with the group, have known the group, I think that's also invaluable. And he ain't half a bad player, Jack. We've seen it. You know, straight away, in assist, won the goal to finish it off. On maybe his weaker foot. I mean, as you described it, through a crowd of players, how did he thread that through? Such a clean, beautiful.
And he waited, which was amazing.
And he waited. He said that in the interview. I had to wait. because
which was amazing. And 97th minute, not to just lash it. I mean, we saw a lot of wayward shooting.
Vieira does that a lot. Vieira, as good as I think the player's going to become, he tends to panic a bit and shoot. And you can learn a lot from that moment from Nelson, all the players can, that he didn't panic. And he does come across quite cool as well, if you think about it. Quite
he does, cool, yeah.
From player. I want him to stay. I don't want him to go on loan. I want to see a lot more of him. 100% all day long. I love the kid. I think he could fulfill the potential that everyone was bragging on about. He really could. And we know you've been worried so much about the position Saka plays in. What happens? Well, Nelson can fit in there. I don't see why not. If he can do things like this, look, no one is at Saka's level. There's no disrespect to any of the players because they've all been brilliant for us this season. But Saka is, you look around the world, Jake. You're better. You and James are the ones that do this. You're better at this than most people I know. You look around. Who would really come in and do what Saka does?
Yeah, I mean, the argument. Sorry, to interrupt.
Go on.
Because I think Ornstein said, you know, we're obviously in for a central midfielder, and there's been some back and forth from a lot of journalists about whether we're in for a striker or whether we're in for a winger. And I keep saying to James offline, I think it's got to be a winger because we've got Jesus, Eddie, Balogun, possibly. I know some people are saying we need that different type of striker. I'm like, I'm not certain we do. When you see what Trossard can offer and the other options you can do, I'm not certain we do need the big target, man. I'm not certain it's absolutely necessary for us, but I do think Saka needs some recovery time. But the problem I've got is you want a top winger. If you're going to buy a winger, you're going to want a top winger, but what top winger is coming in to play second fiddle to Bukayo Saka? Because they know they're not going to start. So, I mean, Reece Nelson, in that sense, has a perfect opportunity to be like, I can be that guy and I won't cost you anything other than a new contract. And I'm sure he'd sign anything we put in front of him. I'm almost certain of that. He wouldn't want to play anywhere else. And the great thing about Reece Nelson, if he does fulfill his potential, is he is someone that can definitely play on both sides, as he's proven in the two cameo appearances he's had. He can play on the right, but I think if you ask him, he actually prefers to play off the left, which is really interesting. Yeah. Which again is literally Arteta's dream. And when in the early years of Arteta's manager, he used Reece Nelson at right wing back a lot, quite successfully. And I was always like, that's, and we were all going, that was probably the most interesting thing he did early on, Arteta. We were like, because he wasn't playing under previous management. And it was very interesting to see. So, like, I mean, and players with contracts coming up are very, they're very interesting to watch. You saw Eddie at the end of last season, scored a lot of goals, got his new contract. And I really hope that Reece Nelson is just super motivated to just make an impact, because he's probably going to start midweek now, and he probably wouldn't have had a chance doing that before this. But now he will probably start midweek. And can he make an impact again midweek against a very good team in Europe, one of the hardest draws we could have had away from home, different prospect, right, from the start. So can he do that? And that's what we're not seeing yet. We don't know if he's got the consistency and all that kind of stuff. But it's now or never, really, for him. But what a great way to sort of, you know, shine a light back onto him. And I thought it was a brilliant cameo appearance. And like you said, fantastic substitution from Mikel Arteta. And I think Smith Rowe took it really well. Some people, you know, when they come on and they come off, they could take it in a different way. I think he was very aware of the moment he was in the fitness. You saw him celebrating more than anyone towards the end. And I think he knows that he's just on another stepping stone to his recovery. And he probably came out of that game hopefully feeling good. No issues. And that's probably a huge thing for Smith Rowe at the moment as well. Yeah. So I think it's great for both players. And it was really nice to see. And you know, I think it was a point where Saka, Smith Rowe, Martinelli and Nelson, they just all hugged it out kind of thing. And it was nice to see that they're all kind of come up together, a lot of these players, and you know, no matter where they're at in their stages, obviously Saka's the star, but they're all very, very humble and really, really happy for Reece to get his moment in it and shine, and hopefully it kicks him on, because we could really do with another forward player with the injuries we've got up there. Like you said, Trossard's really concerning. But Neil, we've talked a little bit on VAR, we've talked about the goals, the fans' reaction. Is there anything else that we want to talk about? I mean, we've spoken about Zinchenko, Partey, Odegaard, Ramsdale. I think they were the key players in that. I mean, you could talk about everyone, but they were really key, those four, I thought.
Gabriel's monumental in a big.
Oh, yeah, our centre-backs as well. Yeah, of course. Yeah, they had a little issue with the first goal, but again, like you said, I mean, we had to expose them a lot more because of the game state as well, and they are really good at handling that exposure. We gave up a couple too many chances for me against a team like Bournemouth, but I think at 2-0 down, you haven't got a choice, really. You've got to play the odds, haven't you? You've just got to roll the dice. And we were really good at doing that.
Yeah, I think right. And I'm digressing, but I just went straight to the... It's just so hard not to, but I just went for celebrations again. And while you're right, Saliba's normally like very calm and composed, and he just went mental. But Gabriel, after all of these games, goes mental, doesn't he?
The scream.
Off, swinging his shirt, screaming like an absolute madman.
He jumped
like
into the crowd, I think, didn't he?
Oh, man. It's just such a joy to see from, you know, what it means to them. And I love the fact that we've got a combination of homegrown and overseas players. And the overseas players are in it just as much. What it means to them to be part of this club, to be part of an English club, which has been, you know, it's institutionalised, really. We're such an established old club with history, Chelsea, no dig there. And, you know, to see that overseas players are getting just as much involved and embroiled in it, and the understanding of it is a joy to watch. And I always look to watch his. I know everyone looks at Zinchenko and everyone else, but I always look for Gabriel because I know he's going to be screaming like a nutcase. And he always is. And he's, I love it.
Yeah, he's brilliant.
It's brilliant. Just brilliant.
I think he's been the best. I think, I honestly think there's been these arguments about who's been the best centre back in the league so far. I think it's been Gabriel. I think it has. I think Saliba's, you know, he's so good, Saliba, and his ceiling is probably higher than Gabriel's. But at this point in time, if you're talking about mental tenacity and character, and I think Gabriel has been the rock of that centre back, and he's made it what it is, and Saliba's obviously brought it up to another level. But people arguing about, you know, Lissandro Martinez and Rafael Varane, I'm like, they just conceded seven against, you know, Liverpool. They conceded three against us, four against Brentford. I'm like, come on, let's not be silly about it, you know. So I think they're right up there, the pair of them. But I think Gabriel has been fantastic. What's interesting is a lot of other fans early in the season would text me about, oh yeah, I could see you improving, you know, left centre back. And I'm like, I don't think you've watched Gabriel. I think you need to watch him, because although he's made the odd error early in the season and stuff like that, I went, one, he's absolutely amazing at recovering from his errors. Like, for example, the Fulham one, he made the error for Mitrovic, who scored the winger. Gabriel, you know, say, he had to score some big goals, Chelsea away, for example. I mean, the guy really knows how to. Yeah, he's so important. But just a fantastic game. I don't know where it stands in Emirates moments. Maybe the way this season pans out will tell us.
But top six,
yeah, it's got to be in there. Maybe, yeah, top three, top five, top six. It's up there for me. If I was there, I'd probably say it was the one. You know, I wasn't, but from watching it, I don't really remember, you know, the crowd going like that. I'm like, that's another level, you know? And that's what the reports have been from a lot of people there. They're like,
maybe the best one ever. Who knows? Just because Bournemouth doesn't mean it doesn't have to be.
No, it's all about the moment, isn't it, really? Yeah.
Exactly. I think the other good one would have been, was it Leicester? Was it Welbeck?
Yeah, that was massive.
We should have gone to win the title that year.
Yeah, of course. Well, the crazy thing about that one was that was like, you thought that was the catalyst, but it was the exact opposite.
It went the other way, didn't it?
Yeah, it was the exact opposite, because it felt like we was in our hands at that point, and we just kind of folded and capitulated, didn't we?
I want to ask you a question, because you tend to ask me questions now. It's not a quiz question. It's again about a little bit of controversy. Sorry to bring the tone down a bit, but I mentioned to you offline about Martinelli being bear hugged. On you know, in one of the corners.
I watched that again, yeah.
And it wasn't their number three, and he's just holding on to him tightly. And I'm like, I just don't know the rules. Is that allowed?
I don't think it's right. I don't think it should be, but I don't think it's ever going to be given. Like, right. I mean, we say that, and probably against us it would be, but you know, I watched it, and I'm like, yeah, it's wrong. It shouldn't happen. Probably should be looked at. I think there, to be honest, Neil, if you're going to get anything out of that, you've got to complain. And nobody complained. Martinelli just went, Like that, I didn't see any complaint from our players. I think it was more like we lost our man as a goal. And Martinelli's not really known for being in that position anyway. So he's like, and he kind of shrugs his shoulders
at it. As well, twice.
Yeah. And I think a more experienced player in the box, if that was like happening to Xhaka, for example, I think he's running to the ref. And that might make the difference there because they probably didn't even look at it. You know, and this ref, as we know, he's not seeing it. He's not seeing it. So, yeah, I think it's one of those unwritten things that you're like, you're never getting it. But the only way you would get it is if you surround the ref. Take the fine that you're going to get next week for it and surround the ref about it. But, yeah, that's the way I kind of looked at it. I did watch it because you texted me about it and I was like, oh, that's interesting. But, Neil, I got one person sent in. We don't ask for questions much recently, but Leeds Gunner won. And I'll answer it because you don't like sort of transfer questions. But he did ask about... Question for the pod. He said, if we bring in a new left back, who's your number one? He said, his is Alphonso Davies from Bayern Munich. That is a very optimistic look at our left back lead. Leeds Gunner. That great option, great player. I agree with you, but I can't see Bayern selling Alphonso Davies to us. But I see where you're going with it. He said, how do we mimic what, Joao Cancelo's doing at Bayern Munich or at City? And, what about using Tomiyasu as a backup left back? I think we will sign a fullback in the summer. I think we'll sell Tierney. I think we'll sell Nuno Tavares. I think we'll get about 60 million for him. And I'm really optimistic on the money we'll get in. But I actually think we will get that money for both those players because I can't see how teams won't want both of them. Nuno Tavares is young. He's done a good loan at Marseille. People in Europe and I think in England will want him. And Tierney, I mean, he's a winner. He's a great left back, old school left back. I think he's not really done anything wrong. I think people want him to. There's already links with him. So on that point, I do think Tomiyasu is a good option as a backup left back for certain players, like, you know, how he played against Salah and how he played against Rashford on right back when we took White off. If it's a one-on-one thing, Leeds Gunner, I think he's a really good idea. But I'm not sure he's got the technicality to be an obvious backup left back for us, like, and mimic what Zinchenko does. So player wise, the only player I've seen us linked to is this guy from Valladolid, who, believe it or not, their owner is Ronaldo, ex-Brazilian Ronaldo, who has a really good friendship with Edu. And I've watched him quite a lot, this Fresneda, through January because we were linked to him. And he is a 6'1" right back, was at Real Madrid, and he can use both feet. And I think we'd sign him and use him on both sides. So I'm really hopeful because he wouldn't cost more than like 15 million. I would love to get this player in. And we were really heavily linked to him in January. And then he said, I'm staying until the summer, but he's definitely leaving in the summer. So I would love that. But I do think either way, I don't know who it's going to be. I think we'll sign a fullback that can play on both sides. And I'll put money that he's right footed. I bet you we try to mimic what Zinchenko does with a right footed player. I just get a feeling because basically Zinchenko's job in a way might be easier for a right footed player because he's always inverted. So I just think it's going to be really interesting to see what we do at fullback. I hope we keep Tomiyasu because I think he's too versatile not to use. You can even use him at centre back. But so I think he'll stay for that reason. But I think we'll get a fullback in because I see two of ours leaving. Great question on that. Let's do a little bit of predictions just before we go. Do you see heavy rotation or low rotation in midweek? It's a big game. It's away from home. We have a really big game against Fulham at Craven Cottage, one of our hardest away games left. Probably not including Liverpool at Anfield and City at City, but it's definitely up there because Fulham are up there. They play tomorrow night or tonight for you against Brentford away, which I didn't realise. What do you think, Neil? Because I've put my team out there and I've said I think we should probably rotate quite heavily, but I don't actually think Arteta will.
He won't. I don't think he will. Maybe four, maybe three or four, maybe five at best. I can certainly see, Tomiyasu maybe coming back in for why, but will he though? I don't know. I think he should. I'm still going to go with the back. I think he'll put Turner in. I think Turner's done nothing wrong. I think he deserves as much game time as he possibly can get. He'll rest for Amazel for Turner. I've got a feeling we're going to see Kiwior. I'm not saying he starts. He'll definitely come on as a sub because he was in the squad for this game.
Yep.
He was on the bench.
He's not played a minute yet, has he?
No. So we've got to see a bit of him, see what he's about. midfield is always a conundrum. I don't know what the situation is with. I wonder if he plays Xhaka to come back and try and get his.
I think he will play Xhaka.
Get him, restart him on that one. So, because he's obviously not, you know, he's obviously dropped and not featured heavily in the last couple of games. So I think maybe Xhaka, yeah. Partey given a rest. But does he need it? He's been out as well.
Yeah, he played pretty much the full 90, didn't he, against Bournemouth?
Oh, yeah, he did need it.
So actually, he might, I think he'll play Jorginho. My team, off the top of my head, I think was Turner. So I've got a couple of 50-50s, but I said Turner, Tomiyasu right back. I could easily see White playing at right back and even Tomiyasu playing left back. But Tomiyasu at right back, I said he'd play Saliba and Kivior, but he could easily play Holding and Kivior or Saliba and Gabriel. We don't really know, but I think he'll play at least one of the regular centre-backs. And with Kivior coming in, maybe Gabriel never gets a rest. So I'm just thinking that. I think Tierney might play at left-back. I think we might give him this game. I said a midfield three of Jorginho, Xhaka, Vieira, rest Odegaard. I feel like he's the one that needs most of the rest. Mm. And the front three is really difficult because we literally don't have options. But I'm 50-50 on if he starts Smith-Rowe. I don't think he will. So I think he will start Saka again. And I think he'll go Nelson, Martinelli, Saka. But
yeah, that's a good one.
And try to take Saka off as first sub, like on 50 or something.
Right.
But I could easily be wrong on all that. And that's quite a lot of rotation. So I think I probably am going to be wrong on that. But it's a tough game. But I really think we need to think about this game on Sunday against Fulham. Can't look ahead, but we've got to keep a few players fresh. The squad feels a little thin with the striking options that we've lost. And I just don't want to. You know, it's a long season, but we've got two games a week now, so we're going to have to figure out how to rotate, aren't we?
Yeah, absolutely. I think I love to go for all competitions, including the League Cup, believe it or not. I think they're all important trophies. They're always a route to success and always a route to silverware to buoy on players to feel they've achieved something at the end of the season. So, of course, I'd want to win both the Premier and the Europa, but it's so special for us this season, so important, so vital, because we know all the other teams around us, potentially with investment, new buyers, are going to be formidable going forwards, maybe as early from next season, I don't know. And we're in control. It's in our hands. We've got to win this title this season. We just have to. So I'm doing something that I don't normally do, but my focus is on that. I know it's wrong to throw all your eggs in one basket because it can go so horribly wrong. We had that with Emery, didn't we, where he kind of threw everything and we lost out on the top four. We don't want to do that, of course, but I can't help as a human being. I'm not even thinking about the Europa game. I should be, and I'm not. I'm going to the home leg, so I should be thinking about it, but I'm not.
Wow.
I'm not thinking about it. I'm just focused on the next Prem game. I'm so ecstatic, as everyone is, from just what happened 48 hours ago. But I can't think anything about that. So yeah. I would want to focus everything onto that, make sure all our players are as fresh as they can be for that game, because it's a tough game.
Yeah, I'm kind of in agreement with you, actually.
Mm.
I'm not sure. Well, I think the same if Jesus Eddie, Trossard were all there, Smith Rowe, it's his legs. You know, you'd feel like you had the ability to rotate and still be, you know, very strong. But it's weird when your squad gets thinner, you feel like you have to protect the players that are fit more. You know, it's a weird one, isn't it? It's like, it must be difficult for Arteta to know which way to go with it. But you have to also think, like, if you're going to give Kiwior minutes, when are you giving them to him if you're not giving him?
I know.
You know what I mean? Like now, it's hard. I think Arteta generally goes quite strong in the Europa League, so I'm not really expecting a huge rotation. But
it would be a great test of his character if he's blooded right from the start against the Champions League side away. That would be quite interesting.
Yeah.
If he does generally, well, you'd be like, wow, what a genius. If he does badly, it's like, you brought him on for a long time before you even signed him with a game.
Yep. You generally think he probably sticks with experience through the centre of the pitch, which is why I think he'll play one centre back. He'll play Xhaka, Jorginho.
Yeah.
He might well play Holding. I wouldn't be surprised. Mm. He, you know, he's got a lot of faith in him. That costs us playing out the back, though. I think with Turner being a little bit uncomfortable, plus Holding, you start to feel a little different about playing out the back. But again, I don't know a lot about Sporting. I watched them against Tottenham. They look pretty dangerous. Mm. I think they beat Tottenham at Sporting anyway. They looked, you know, at home, difficult. They were very strong. It's not. That's true. That's true. Probably doesn't read into it too much. But it's going to be an interesting one. But before we go, let's do predictions for Sporting. I don't think we're going to do a midweek pod. So we'll do predictions for Sporting away and then Fulham away on Sunday at 3 p.m, which is an interesting time for a Sunday game. But Neil, go ahead for those two and first goal scorers if you can.
I can't think about Sporting. I just don't know what to say. 2-1. And Nelson, come on, let's give the kid a boost. Back to back. 2-1 Nelson. And if you want me to say Fulham, go on. I mean, they're all cup finals, they're all must wins as far as I'm concerned. So I'm not gonna predict anything other than the win. It just depends on the scoreline. It's away, a little bit trickier, maybe. But then we thought Bournemouth was gonna be a nice little game to get that goal difference, and what happened. So it could be the complete opposite of the way we're thinking, and we could go there and smash them. So I'm going to go be positive, and I'll say again 4-0. That was my third 4-0 in a row.
Jeez.
Yeah.
I think they're going to put mugs up there.
No, I know. I just think that I think that the team are going to be so buoyed at what they're doing. They're going to be bouncing, literally bouncing. I'm going to go 4-0. Stuff it. 4-0.
Travelling back from Portugal on Thursday night or Friday morning.
Yeah, I know. You're more pragmatic about it. I get it, but I saw it. 2-1 Lisbon, 4-0 Fulham.
I'm here.
And Martinelli scoring that one. Martinelli.
Okay. Okay, cool. I'll take both of those. Absolutely. I'll go, I don't know, top that, but I'll go 1-1 midweek. I'll go 1-1 midweek. And I'll say, yeah, I'll go with you on that one. I'll go Nelson. I think he's definitely starting. So, and do you know what's crazy is at the moment with Trossard, Eddie and Jesus out, I'd like to get some clarification on Eddie soon. I'd never like it when they're like, well, we're not really sure here. And I'm like, well, just tell us what it is at least. What's the body part? Is it the ankle like we was mentioned, or is it something else? Or it's just a bit frustrating. But no, basically, there's a huge opening on the left wing in the Premier League at this point. Is it Smith Rowe? Is it because Trossard's not there? It's not Martinelli because we've got to shift him inwards. Or if it is Martinelli, we are, you know, there's still an opening there. So Nelson should be looking at that and being like, I'm taking it because this is the only opportunity I've got here. So I really hope he does take it with both hands, because if he plays well midweek, he'll start again on the weekend if he's keeping himself fit and he can recover in time. So I'll go Nelson, but 1-1 in midweek. And at Fulham, I've watched them. They're a good side, especially at home. They're a good side. I think they beat Chelsea at home. You know, they've beaten a few big sides there. But I'll go 2-1 Arsenal, Odegaard. I'll go 2-1 Arsenal, Odegaard for that one.
Yeah.
And I think it's going to be a very tough game, though. And just got to win, mate. You've got to win that one. Just
3 points is more important than anything. 3 points, I don't care if it's 1-0 or 18-0. 3 points.
Yeah, 3 points, exactly. And, you know, we asked for two wins last week and we got them, and we want two wins again. So your predictions would be fantastic for this one. But please subscribe to us on Purely Arsenal YouTube page, Purely Arsenal FP on Twitter. Give us tweets in your questions like Leeds Gunner did. We don't ask from directly too much anymore, but we might start doing it again. But just if you tweet us a question anytime, we'll ask it on the pod. I always remember to ask the questions, and I always give you a shout out on the pod as well. So if you've got a question, like, oh, I wonder what people think about this, we will sit and we will discuss it to the best of our ability. Obviously, we won't always, I'm sure you won't always agree with us, but we're just discussing our opinions like you guys are. Again, thoughts with James, thoughts with his family. Yeah, absolutely. Thank you to Anthony for always getting a podcast up, and other guests, you know, Garrett and co. We will get on, and James, of course, in the future. And we will try to be on after Fulham away next week. But just keep winning, boys. Keep winning. We've got to, because City won again this weekend, a tough game against Newcastle. Their toughest games are at home now, basically. So you never know, though. You never know what could happen. So got to stay positive. We're 5 points clear, and Gabby Jesus is on his way back. So come on, boys. Keep it the Arsenal.
Come on.
Thank you, Neil. Up the Arsenal. Come on, boys.